Welcome to Metaphysical Straight Talk from the Heart. I'm your host, Atira. And this evening, or this afternoon, in Seattle anyway, I am so thrilled to have an incredible guest. In fact, I almost don't know where to begin with my guest because he has written so many phenomenal books. I met G.W. Harden several years ago, 10 years ago, I can't believe it, 10 years ago that the book The Messenger came out. He's the co-author with Julia Ingram on that book. And we met through a mutual friend, Mary Ellen Angel Scribe, and we'll tell you a little bit about that adventure. But he's since then written several books. One of them's called The Days of Wonder. Another one is On the Wings of Heaven. And today we're going to talk a lot about On the Wings of Heaven because he's here in Seattle teaching some wonderful workshops at East West Bookstore. Gary, welcome to my show.
It's really nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm so excited. And I have to tell you, Gary, ever since I've met you, it seems like every time we get together, we have an adventure.
Well, you know, when there's a gathering of eagles, there tends to be a lot of action.
Yeah, it's really phenomenal, the work you're doing now. I'm going to start off with how we met. We met 10 years ago when the Messenger book first came out at actually the symposium.
Yeah, The Messengers was a true story about a series of angelic appearances with a wealthy businessman whose name was Nick Bunick. And after the story became a national bestseller, Nick did put on a symposium here in Seattle. And that's where I ran into you and Mary Ellen. Mary Ellen, I'd met because she'd done work in, you know, getting the word out on the Messengers. And she told me I had to meet you, and lo and behold, it happened.
And you were pretty skeptical, weren't you?
Well, you know...
And it's good. I think it's good.
You know, I'm a mathematician. I mean, you know, I have a degree in mathematics and computer science, and in spite of the fact that I tend to write these true stories that are unbelievable, I'm still, you know, a healthy skeptic, and I think that's what makes my story so believable is that, you know, I like to tell them from that point of view, the point of view of the healthy skeptic.
Absolutely, and you're a phenomenal writer. The way you use words is amazing, amazing. And, you know, I do think it's healthy to be skeptical. I mean, I've been in this all my life, but yet I'm always skeptical, and I'm always actually surprised, because fear is, I mean, I think the day you quit being surprised, you're on the other side.
I agree.
And I think you still get surprised over there differently, though.
And, you know, that's one of my favorite things about this work I do. I get to meet some of the most amazing people, and it is always a constant surprise, yourself included.
Well, it's interesting, because Gary and I actually have had a couple of really interesting journeys. Gary's gift, one of his gifts, besides writing, is really doing energy work. He's an incredible healer. He's an incredible, I think really you came in as this mathematician. I think you came in as a numbers person. And it enables you to use energy in different ways. And in fact, we went to the plateau of Giza and did some energy work. And I have to tell you, it was phenomenally interesting, except it blew my wiring for 3 days. Literally knocked me sort of on my bottom, as well as another friend of ours, John, who is like this incredible. How tall do you think he is? He's huge. He's tall.
6'4", maybe?
Yeah, and it was a very powerful experience.
Yeah, I mean, he hit the dirt.
Yeah.
He couldn't even move.
I know, it's very shocking to see that tall of sturdy-built guy, you know, go to his knees really, truly, because of energy. And really, you could absolutely feel the wave of energy change on the plateau. And so every time I get with you, we seem to have interesting phenomena happen. And I think it's because you are so tied to the angels, so tied to the energy work and grids of the earth and other places. I'm not sure where all these grids or gates go, because you seem to work interdimensionally.
Well, you know, there was a series of appearances which are still going on, not with me, but with one of the people that I wrote about. And in one of these appearances, Angel Gabriel shows up before I start getting this download of information. And Gabriel comes right out and says, the language of the angels is mathematics. Now, who'd have thunk? But I have to tell you, I love that, and I think it does work well, you know, with my background as a mathematician.
I do think the language of the angels is mathematics and love, and I think if you really could see the energy of love, you would see that it's mathematical as well. I think actually everything in the universe is mathematical, even though I can hardly do math. But, you know, it's interesting. A few years ago, I read for a Mensa convention, and everything, I hadn't noticed it before, but when you get 20 of them in a room, you know, you start noticing these things, and everything comes into them through a filter, and it's all mathematical formulas, every single thing.
Well, you know,
it's fascinating.
Anybody who's seen the movie What the Bleep understands that quantum physics, which is heavily, heavily laden with mathematics, is taking us to a place we've never been as a society, as a world. And what they're discovering through quantum mechanics and quantum physics is what I call, you know, the new mysticism. I mean, you're talking about a phenomenon in physics which, you know, has rocked the physics world, but most of us, you know, haven't heard of, which is called Bell's theorem. And, you know, Bell's theorem is a mathematical proof for what we might consider the existence of a higher being, a god. And Bell's theorem, loosely translated by author Marilyn Ferguson, is, quote unquote, all of life is one. And this is a mathematical proof. And some physicists say, you know, go so far as to say that, you know, this is a mathematical proof for what we call God. And it's just changing the scientific world in ways never dreamt of.
I've been waiting all my life for someone to say that, GW. I really, truly have.
Well, and I love this stuff. I mean,
because, you know, for centuries, philosophers and oracles and psychics and mediums have been saying all are one. So to have it put in a really, scientifically proven, I mean, for years, that's what everybody's always said, well, the day you can prove this, then the world will change. And I think you speak about that.
Indeed, yeah, the workshop I'm going to do tomorrow night here in Seattle is what I call the new healing paradigm. Subtitle, Healing in the Paradigm of Oneness. And it's all about how we alter what scientists or quantum physicists call the quantum realities. And that we do that by being aware of consciousness. I mean, there is absolutely no argument from the quantum physics point of view that hardly anything, if anything at all, exists without consciousness. And when you start talking in those terms, you know, you get the physics community in an uproar because some physicists feel that this is not science, this is philosophy. And quantum physicists say, well, you know, I beg to differ. You know, inventions are now coming out, you know, based upon some of these laboratory discoveries.
Well, actually, in your talk the other night, you talked about that Bell's theory.
Theorem, yeah.
Had actually disproven Einstein's, because at the time Einstein did the study, he didn't have the equipment.
Well, it wasn't so much a disproving as that he was trying to repeat Einstein's experiments that he was doing on unified field theory, and in the process, because he had much better technology,
he
discovered Einstein had made a mistake.
Right. Well, he wasn't wrong, right. He didn't have the equipment at the time
right. To
learn what we now learn. And that, I say that all the time, that, you know, it was a scientific fact one time that the world was flat, but we're evolving, you know, as science catches up with us, as spiritual people, because masters, and most of the masters on Earth have always taught that, you know, everything is connected. Thoughts are things, and everything is connected. And quantum physics is now absolutely proving that.
In more ways than one. And some people are having a hard time with it.
Well, I think this dramatic of change or being responsible, making people be responsible for, because when you get that everything's connected and everything's one, then there's a personal responsibility for our actions and how we think, because we affect.
It's really a very good point you're making here. I mean, I have to tell you in my workshop that, you know, one of the phenomena that people have a very tough time with is holding and having responsibility for their own lives and their own situations. From a quantum physics point of view, everything is about choice. Everything is about choice. And the choices that we make determine what we call reality. And if people choose to see themselves as victims, well, life really respects and honors your choice, and you end up facing life as a victim. If you fully understand that you are a co-creator, that you affect life rather than being affected by life, then you can be responsible for choices that completely alter your quantum realities. And in the movie What the Bleep, one of my favorite scenes is where the scientist is sitting there in front of his fireplace and he's saying, you know, I look forward to waking up every morning so that I can create my day. And that's where we're headed as a people.
I agree. Absolutely. In my work that I do with readings for people, I only have them 45 minutes, and I try to teach them that, you know, every day we're co-creating. Most days we get up and co-create crap because we're caught in our belief system. We're caught in our stuckness. Sometimes it's not even our belief system. It may have been our parents or our, you know, schools or whatever affected us as a child. So it's a conscious choice to see that pattern and to change it.
You know, again, an excellent point you're bringing up here, belief system. And again, that's one of the big chunks that I like to bring to my audience is this whole notion of belief system. And when we're talking about reality, the way we look at things, the way we choose to look at things, oftentimes are embedded in quote-unquote belief systems that we really haven't so much chosen. We've just been given, and we haven't questioned, and we haven't re-examined, and we haven't really worked with. And so I like to move in a whole nother direction other than belief systems. And it's what I call the power of trust. And this power of trust comes out of a sense of really understanding fully not only who we are, but who we can be. And that really starts getting you into some of the writings by some of our modern-day philosophers. God, I'm trying to remember the name. Oh my God! I'm sorry, I'm just drawing a blank here.
That's okay. It'll come to you later.
Eckhart Tolle, I think. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
When you read, if you study metaphysics for a long, long time, you will see a repeat thing. You know that you are a co-creator, personal responsibility, and choices. Everything is a choice, and most people want to pretend it's not. Like you said, you know, they want to pretend that their job, their boss, their ex-lover, their whatever, the president, whoever they want to blame at the time, is responsible for whatever the situation is. But truly, as we change, as our consciousness changes, as we make wiser choices, there and it cause and effect, you know, the law of attraction, like attracts like, and the cause of for every action, reaction, then causing the right action causes the right reaction. And the world starts following with us. And I do see huge in the last few years where we've seen these huge things of prayers of peace and the Troubadour Twyman, so many Marianne Williams, and so many of the new, quote unquote new age people really changing the paradigm, making us look, the movie What the Bleep, all of these, as well as this your book On the Wings of Heaven. That book, I think, is an amazing book, and it is actually the foundation of the workshop you're teaching. And then you have a new book coming out, and I'm sorry I don't remember the title of it because it isn't here yet.
Yeah, the new book is the sequel to On the Wings of Heaven, and it's called The Master's Return. And it is very much a handbook on how we can completely move our own lives into what I call, you know, the full potential, the recognition of self-acceptance and self-empowerment. And in parallel with that, you know, the last book I wrote is called The Indigo Rising, which is a true story about one of these young people, you know, that I worked with in trying to move them into a place of self-empowerment. And, you know, I really believe that this new generation that's coming forward, what I like to call the quantum generation, they get it. I mean, they're born getting it. I mean, they really understand, you know, that this world has to be changed. And they also understand that the way you change it is through yourself and not through belief systems, not through politics, you know, not through organizations, but through yourself. And, you know, that's why I love working with this younger generation, you know, because, you know, they do get it. And, you know,
they
given
see
enough.
The answer so fast, it seems to me.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's just, there's no hesitation. They go from, what's the problem? There's the answer. Let's cut out the stuff in between.
Yeah, I mean, you know, why are we waiting here? And, I really feel that, a lot of the change that we're starting to see in our world right now is coming through this quantum generation, these young folks that are in their 20s and their teens and younger.
Well, what I see in those two is they always see the possibility. You know, they don't see what isn't going to happen. I never hear out of an indigo. I'll hear out of them that, like, they see what's wrong, and they're a little angry about maybe what we've done in the earth. But I never see, like, why it can't be fixed. They don't use that. They just go to where here's the answer. They don't get caught up in weighing about things. You know what I mean?
Well,
I haven't heard them do that. I just haven't.
Well, there are those that, you know, that are at that level, but those that are trying to, what I call, remember. I mean, you know, a lot of them, you know, have checked out because they've been totally shut down and disempowered, and, you know, they're usually into drugs and alcohol and self-destructive behavior.
You consider that an indigo?
I do, and there is a process in which, you know, I try to get them, you know, to remember, you know, who they are and what they came here with, and, you know, it's not too much different than your own case, if I might bring that forth here, because I remember in your story, which I wrote about in The Days of Wonder, you know, you basically were shut down as a young girl with your gifts.
Absolutely. It wasn't socially acceptable. Yeah, my mother being Southern Baptist. But I didn't choose drugs or alcohol. I'm lucky there. But I agree with you that I've seen more drugs and alcohol for the indigos in this generation. And one of the reasons I think that happened is also because it was their parents kind of got into the drugs and alcohol as well. And so when it came to having kids who were very busy, Ritalin seemed to be the answer also. You know what I mean?
Well, you know,
easier
and that's
to drug them than cope with them.
And that is a hot button with me. I mean, certainly there
me
are
too.
Some kids, you know, who you know, do have conditions that need to be addressed, but for the most part, some of these indigos are so misdiagnosed as being ADD or ADHD, and, you know, they're not having a problem. It's their teachers who are having a problem or their parents who are having a problem and are basically trying to shut them down so that, you know, they won't be such an issue or a thorn in their side. And typically, as our society is prone to do, we tend to look toward pharmaceuticals.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and if you look at the latest statistics out right now, they're showing that with teens, that the biggest problem now that's starting to show up is not to the taking of illegal drugs. What they're seeing is a big problem starting to erupt from taking pharmaceutical drugs.
Well, it's so socially acceptable. It's crazy.
Well, I mean, they're stealing them from their parents, who,
yeah,
you know.
It's true. We're heavily medicated.
Yeah, that's right.
You know,
the medicine cabinet's full.
You know, so they can cope again. So they don't have to look at personal responsibility. They don't have to look at understanding choices. And our society is really caught up in that. And also, I think, unfortunately, our school systems, you know, they're struggling to keep up with the computer society, the demand for an education in other ways, but they don't get that the spiritual, how we are strengthened spiritually and self-esteem-wise, you know, will lead the nation. And so that part of us are balanced in that because, you know, kids are stressed out at 7 now. You know, it's amazing to me because when I was a kid, I was stressed out probably because I was, you know, seeing spirit, but not like kids. I talk to 7 and 8 year olds now that are worried about, are they going to get into, you know, some university?
Well, and, you know, I talked to a lot of teachers who really have a genuine concern about what's happening to this emerging generation. And I've talked to parents of, you know, PTAs who are feeling the same way. And in both cases, they feel like they're fighting a system. And the question is, what is the system? What is in place that is making it so difficult for us to address these needs of these children? And in one of the efforts I made in doing some research for another book in the state of Colorado, one of the things I discovered by working with the Rocky Mountain Research Institute was that a lot of the school systems don't even want to have surveys or have research done to see if there really is a paradigm or a shift or a special need that needs to be put in place for this emerging generation of gifted kids. The reason being that if there is documentation that there is a special need, then by state law, it has to be funded.
Yeah.
And they're already underfunded.
And they're already in fear.
And there's a catch-22 that's in place here. So, you know, I'm not sure where we're going to find a solution for this with regard
well,
to school.
I have news for you because you actually talked about some of the solutions that we're going to have for this in your talk. I want to talk a minute about On the Wings of Heaven because it lays the foundation for where we're going with our talk of things that you brought up about the 100 years of peace.
1,000 years of peace.
I'll take more. I'll take any peace I can get, darling. Peace and quiet and, you know, blessings in the world. I would love to see that. In On the Wings of Heaven, it talks about bricks. And so I'd like you to talk a little bit about bricks for a minute.
Well, these angels show up and they end up giving to this very salt of the earth person named Joe Crane information and kind of like a spiritual handbook. And in that handbook, there are what I call three scripts. And the three scripts are the script of blessings, the script of giving, and the script of deeds. And each one of these, they use a metaphor of building a spiritual mansion, that each of us can build a spiritual mansion for ourselves. And we can do this by creating these metaphorical bricks, and these metaphorical bricks are really based on concepts that, you know, we originally find what are called the Beatitudes, blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are the peacemakers. Only it takes it to a completely another level. And whether we bless things around us or we give to those around us or we are called to action through our deeds to lift up this world, to lift up the people around us, there is always a return that comes to us that they use in this metaphor that they call bricks. And these spiritual bricks are what we use to create our spiritual mansion. And one of the things I like is they say, you know, bricks are never taken away. You can never lose them. You can always add, but you never lose. And so, you know, there's no preaching and there's no threat. You know, there's no do this or, you know, in these.
There's no I'm going to get you, God, in this.
Absolutely correct.
Yeah, because, you know, when I've worked with angels since I was 5 years old, and I've never heard a nasty angel. I have to just tell you, I've never heard them where, you know, oh, you did that, so we're going to, you know, take something away from you, or you're going to, you know, suffer some revenge, you know. So I was very confused as a child when I went to my mother's church. I know what you're saying. It's so important for people to know that, you know, we're creators. We're co-creating. It goes back to the quantum physics again. You know, you're the person that chooses to create or not create.
And, you know, this is the direction we need to take our world. I mean, you know, it's so easy when you look around at the horrors that show up on our TV screens and in our newspapers and magazines that you want to throw your hands in the air and say, you know, let me out of this place. Stop the world. I want to get off. And I'm really trying to bring forward this new information that says, you know, we can change all of this.
I'd like to just read one of the statements from the book, and just so people get a sense of the writing in it, and then we can move on to more in the book.
Sure.
It says, see you tears in the eyes of a man or woman. Know they are in pain or joy, and bless their heart, a brick is made. And it goes on like that. If you see someone who is in anger or rage, know they are in pain for some reason, and bless their heart, a brick is made. You know, it's rhythmic, it's gentle, it's soft, and it really is truly how the angels speak and how simplistic it truly is.
And you know,
like you said, when somebody, you're driving in your car, it's when he cuts you off, you can choose to be angry or you can choose to give a blessing.
Indeed. And the angels tell us that no blessing is too small. And there's a tremendous power in issuing forth blessing. And we've forgotten that. You know, we've forgotten how we can alter consciousness, how we can alter quantum realities around us simply by, you know, issuing forth a state of consciousness that literally demands a co-creative notion out of it rather than a victimhood or a destructive or self-destructive notion about it.
I also noticed really, truly in the last few years, it's almost like people can't receive either. It's interesting. We want to be loved. We want to be appreciated. But we've been in this society where I think people feel so unappreciated a lot of their times in their work or different situations that almost when people do kindness, people don't know what to do about it.
Well, that's a really good point. I mean, American society is a society based upon power. I mean, we've gotten where we are by might or by fright or by power or by, you know, moving in and doing what we think we need to do. And, I mean, there's a part of it that's fine. I mean, there's a part of owning who you are and claiming power in a positive and supportive way. But there's a counter side to that where, you know, the bully is a destructive kind of power. And when we start using power from the point of view of do it my way or the highway, we're losing that whole notion of oneness. And we're creating situations that are self-sabotaging. And if we don't turn that around, then, you know, we will face the consequences. You know, if we choose to see that we have enemies rather than the potential of making friends, then we're going to have a life based on enemies instead of a life in which we can foster new friendships and new relationships in this world.
I really believe we're coming into a time where we have to see everyone as a citizen of the universe, that everyone is connected, and once we see that, you know, everybody worries about putting food on their table. everybody worries about, can they have a roof over their head? You know, the basic needs. And it's not necessarily about someone has more than me, but it really is about, is everyone have a roof over their head? Is everyone fed? You know, those are the level of awareness that I really see that is coming out of much of the teachings, like you were teaching, is that compassion, world compassion, universal compassion. It's an amazing time to be alive. Tell me a little more about the 1,000 years of peace.
Well, I'm on record as stating that I believe that the 1,000 years of peace will begin in 2007. And that's not to say that it's just going to last for 1,000 years. I mean, that is a reference that does come out of the Book of Revelation, and I'm just borrowing it as a metaphor. What I'm really talking about is a new era of peace. And I'm not the only one who's making this prediction. There are Native American elders and shamans who are making the same claim. There are Eastern avatars like Sai Baba who's come out and said the same thing. There are...
Say the date again, Gary.
Pardon?
Please say the date again. I think it's important for people to hear the date.
It's next year, 2007.
Guys, we don't have much time. Everybody climb on board.
And I'm not here to say that, you know, some fairy godmother is going to come in with a magic wand and say, poof, peace is here. What I'm saying is next year you're going to see the beginning of an incoming tide, and this tide will not be stopped. It will continue, and it will take over. The kind of world that we're looking at from the point of view of fear, fear-driven, terrorism, military solutions, you're going to see the end of that, I'm telling you now.
And military has always seemed very male energy to me. You know, the protector, the kind of male, just, you know, aggressor energy, which facilitates, quote-unquote, the warrior in that. And I kind of equate peace to the feminine energy, but maybe it's a balance of both.
Well, I think that's a good point. I mean, there is an aspect of the warrior energy, as you say, that is protective. You know, that is dynamic in assuring that the self is not injured, and I'm okay with that.
Mothers are protective of their kids.
Absolutely correct.
Yeah.
I mean, in fact, you know, from an archetypal point of view, young children throughout modern and pioneering times. I mean, the mothers stayed with the kids while the dads, you know, went out and hunted game and brought the food in. But when they got to a certain age, then, you know, dad comes in and takes over, and, you know, there's a whole different kind of protection, you know, that sets in. But when we take that to the point of view where we think that we and only we have the right answer and that we have to move in and have governance over what we think is quote-unquote right, that's where we're stepping on different territory. This is where we're creating division. This is where we're completely denying the potential of oneness, the potential of finding common ground, and it exists. I mean, one of my favorite statements that comes out of quantum physics is, before there is a problem, there is always a solution. Before there is a problem, there is always a solution. And that has tremendous implication, you know.
Well, Gary, I wish I'd been in that math class, because I'll tell you, it would have saved me a lot of worrying over the years.
Well, this is where we're headed. I mean,
I'm ready for the world to be taught that.
Well,
because, you know, really, if we have hope that there's a solution, I don't think we would do fear as much.
Well, that's the whole point. If we choose fear, and again, we're talking about choices.
Absolutely.
Here. This is a very quantum thing. If we choose fear, and all you have to do is look at the techniques that are used in political electioneering. to see how people try to saber-rattle and create situations that cause fear, because in trying to cause fear, you pretty much have control.
Well, I also think that we're so busy leaking our divine energy on our fears, the, oh my God, what if, that we forget that we leak that energy on creating that rather than creating the world we really want.
Again, it's a choice. You know, is the glass half empty or is the glass half full?
The truth, it's in perfect balance. We need air and water, don't we?
It is indeed.
And so back to the Wings of Heaven. I want to go back there because it really, this book started laying an interesting foundation in your journey and in the journey of many other people, because it started talking about a gateway.
Yes.
Again, and you're going to teach on this weekend, correct?
I am, and I have. Did a workshop last night on what we call this gate of grace, or this angelic gateway.
And boy, did you blow my circuits again.
And this is something that the angels gave us, and it's quite mathematical. In fact, I spent months researching it to find out that the entire phenomenon is based on what's called quantum arithmetic. And this angelic gateway is nothing less than a quantum event.
And it looks very much like, somewhat like the ancient Kabbalah that's been around for a long time.
It borrows from several traditions, and that is one of them. And it uses those traditions to give us a way of reconnecting with the angelic realm, or with heaven, as you wish. And certainly we can do that on our own, anytime, any place, anywhere. But when you have what's called sacred geometry involved, it greatly enhances potential. It greatly enhances our capacity to connect. It greatly enhances the vibrations, if you want to talk about string theory here, so that we are in closer vibration with these higher existences. So that, you know, we do have an easier time in communicating and connecting with them.
In your new book, The Master's Return, you actually give the formula for this gate, correct?
I do.
And it actually is based on, you said something about certain numbers, like 1, 4, 7.
Well, it's based upon what's called a quantum seed. And a quantum seed is a series of numbers which is used to create the entire geometry. And I won't get into it, but from a quantum arithmetic point of view, it's called a myriad, which is an entire network of energies. But the quantum seed that the angels gave us is 1, 3, 4, 7. It turns out that this is the second highest myriad within quantum vibration. There's only one higher than that. And that's what they called quantum mathematicians call the God seed. Or you find this in Abram's books on the Bible code and phenomena like that, where, you know, sacred text actually carries a vibration that can, you know, be coded, decoded kind of thing. So yes, this gateway is based upon a mathematical combination 3, 4, 7, which is the triangle and the square, which you see in the pyramids, the Great Pyramids of Giza, which, you know, is a favorite topic of yours and mine.
Absolutely. I don't think anyone can go and look at those pyramids and not be changed forever. Absolutely. Just the energy is so amazing.
Well, it turns out that this angelic gateway is directly proportional to the geometry of the pyramids of Egypt.
I am not surprised after last night. The interesting thing was, when this book first came out, they have what they call a gathering, which are sort of initiation, I would say. Wouldn't you call it that?
That's a good word, yes.
And so actually Mary Ellen and I were gathered as one of part of your seven, a group of seven that you did, and you've initiated several groups. But it was interesting because at that time I thought the gateway was pretty amazing. I thought it was pretty phenomenal. However, last night when I saw the gateway again, it is, something's gone different. Something's so much more amazing. I was actually kind of so out of my body watching it that I couldn't even articulate when he asked me to, like, show up. I was like, wait a minute, Gary, I gotta watch all this. It's so amazing to watch it on a spiritual level. The energy, first of all, lines up in this incredible grid, in columns of incredible light, and then the angels, archangels show up. And I can't explain it all the way, but in this moment, there was an unusual angel that showed up. It was 9 feet tall and the most incredible aqua blue, and it sort of looked like a fiber optic angel in that the light was coming out of the tips of the feathers. It was phenomenal. And then it actually burst into like sparks, like the 4th of July, and went out into the room. And at that point, I noticed we both were like backing out into the corner because
yeah,
the energy
was
so intense.
Yeah, it was quite filled with an amazing energy. In fact, I was concerned that a few people were going to pass out standing in the sacred geometry.
Yeah, I noticed when they stand in the sacred geometry, if their eyes are closed, often they almost start to go into REM.
Yeah, there were a couple of people who did. One lady, I was a little concerned I was going to have to go catch her. But, I mean, that does happen with this. And something wonderful happened last month in Estes Park, Colorado, in which we brought together 222 people and moved them into a whole different, very complicated, elegant, and beautiful sacred geometry to basically create the phenomena for this opening to this 1,000 years of peace. And these people succeeded. I mean, I was there. I saw what happened. And it was basically the descent of the angels moving into oneness with humanity. And there were many people who were able to witness this. And this is the beginning of what we're calling the new creation, our capacity to allow our world to make choices that will, you know, alter the conditions of suffering that we have had to endure and no longer need to.
When was that time? When was the date?
That occurred on June 13th.
It's interesting because I would say, or I thought around the 13th, 14th of June, around the 12th I started noticing it, that the energy was shifting. There was a different how we hook into energy as clairvoyants. And it's interesting because I wasn't the only one. Agnes Thomas, a pet psychic from back east, called me. There were several people who called me and left messages saying, you know, what's going on with the energy? You know, things are different. I must have had like 17 phone calls from other clairvoyants going like, hey, Atira, what's up? Like, they think, like, I should always know, you know? Dom made that. But he wasn't even letting me in. But they said there was a huge shift even in consciousness, but also in the energy and how it comes in with the angelic realm.
Yeah, you know, it wasn't easy getting these 222 people together. And
I can imagine.
I mean, up to a week before the event, we weren't even close to the number, and then something happened. I mean, people started signing up, and before we knew it, we had the number. And
angels as your agents, Gary. You can't go wrong. So I really think maybe, you know, I was trying to analyze, because trust me, I didn't get a lot of sleep last night after that, what really happened because the grid was so different. And I have to tell you guys, I came home, I actually stopped to get something to eat, thinking, you know, that would help, because I had a hard time staying in my body, and you shouldn't drive when you're doing that. And I got home, and I ate, and I thought, okay, things are fine, I'm going to be okay. I called Gary and kind of told him what I saw, and then so I thought I'd take a baking soda sea salt bath because that usually grounds you and puts you back in your body. But the phenomena that happened was that all the lights went out in my house. So, of course, my analytical side says it's a breaker. So I go down and check that. And because I was still, like, my mind's running 1,000 miles an hour, what happened, I wasn't going, like, this is spiritual, you know. So then I come back upstairs and I happen to look out the window. I go, wait a minute, the neighbor's lights are on. And I look, you know, on all four sides, and everybody's light's okay but mine. So then my guide said that, because I've always had angels posted at my four corners of my house and stones. So they said that they rearranged my protection and my energy grid to match the new energy
That's what happened to the 222 people at Estes Park.
Yeah, I think you get totally rewired.
I'll vouch for that. I mean, the whole bunch of us, we had a tough time for almost 2 weeks afterwards.
Oh, Gary, I can't afford that downtime. I hope I keep getting my message. It was interesting, though, because it was so interesting to me in this fact that they're building, like, the metro thing close to my house, and it's been agitating my energy. It's like, because I think it has a different kind of wiring or something, so I actually have had a low-grade kind of hum thing. It's gone. I don't hear it today. I was so thrilled. I said, thank you, angels. Thank you, spirit. Thank you, Gary and the gates.
Well, I want everyone to know that we are talking about a different vibration. We are talking about a new kind of world. We are talking about the fulfillment of what many traditions call the coming together of heaven and earth. And this is the time, and it is now. I think we're looking at one of the greatest moments in human history about to come upon us.
I am so excited. Gary, I do want to give your website, because we'll get to talking. It's almost time. I'll have to go towards the ending of the show, but can we give your website? We want people to be able to find your new book. It is not out of the printer yet, is it?
Just about.
Just hopefully in the next week or so?
About 2 weeks would be my guess. Yeah.
Yay. So you'll have notification about that on your website, so
indeed.
If you'll give your website.
Well, I'm taking orders now if people want to do it through the
reorder
website. Yeah.
Okay. You can also check out information. I know East West has all your books. www.eastwestbookstore.com.
And my website is gwharton.com, H-A-R-D-I-N, so that's pretty easy.
Exciting. I also want to mention that we're going to have next Thursday, we're going to have the co-author of Julie Ingram. So I'll get to have a wonderful visit there. I'm not sure, Chris, why we're having feedback yet. you never can tell with me and my wiring. I'm sorry. Poor GW, the first time he tried to interview me, the tape recorder would not work. I think I was driving the poor author crazy. So please make sure that you look into the book On the Wings of Heaven, his new book,
The Master's Return.
I can't hardly wait to see it. Also, he does. Are there still places opening for the workshop, or are we full?
There is still room.
Oh, good. So you can certainly check that out at East West. You can go on online and get the information at eastwestbookshop.com. Gary, it's been so wonderful. I hope you'll come back because we didn't hardly touch the surface.
I would love to.
I mean, there's so much information. I have to tell you, last night when I heard you talk, you brought so much more information.
Folks, this isn't the end of the program. We still got about 5 minutes. I was just letting you know there's a caller online.
Oh, well.
And I'm breaking into the speaker trying to be soft because it's magnified.
That's okay. We love you.
Thank you.
Call.
Okay.
Hello.
Hello, Atira.
Hi, darling. Who am I speaking to and where are you calling from?
This is Nancy Alter.
Oh, Nancy, darling, I was just thinking about you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I was just thinking about you, and then I got this email, and I'm going, wow.
You got a question for us? CW is here, and I know you read the messenger, so.
Yeah, I have not read the messenger, but I read the program that was connected with it out online, and I thought, wow. And then I read your email about the grid, the angel grid that you saw at East West.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to let you know that I've seen it in my bedroom every time the angels sing.
That's interesting. That's wonderful, Nancy. It's because last night when the grid was formed, one of the things I said is, you know, when they come and they sing, you see it like that. And so it's wonderful to hear that someone else is singing and I'm not nuts.
Yeah.
So I really, you know, Nancy, if you get a chance, read his new book. Cause
I will.
You're going to love it.
I will.
Thank you for calling in.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
Excuse me? I'm sorry?
I just want to know if you had any other questions.
None.
Okay, thanks so much.
Oh, thank you.
Awesome. Bye.
Bye.
So, GW, it would appear that other people are seeing what we're seeing, so that's confirmation.
Well, I have gotten confirmation from around the country.
Well, I'm sure you have 222 people that are mega believers after that weekend.
Indeed. Yeah, it was great. And thank you for, you know, letting me talk about it. Really appreciate the time here with
Well,
you.
I hope, Gary, that you'll come back when the book is in print so we can actually really put more into this. And I hope that you're going to, I know that it's hard because you really have been on the road for the last 4 years or more doing workshops and that. But, you know, we need you to do that, Gary, because we need more educating through this. So I'm hoping that the angels will keep you going, and we look forward to the new book. And thank you so much for everything. Please, please, if you can this weekend, guys, come to East West and get the experience of this in the full experience, because you'll never be the same. You will be changed literally forever. Thank you so much. And I hate to say goodbye, but it's that time to sign off. Please know that Gary's consented to come back, I hope, at least two more times or more, as much as I can get him to volunteer. And that next week we'll be interviewing Julie Ingram, who is the co-author of The Messenger and has also written a book, and unfortunately I don't have the title in my brain today.
The Lost Sisterhood.
Thank you so much. About the women's role in the Bible, and she has regressed a lot of women and has their message for the future, and so we're looking so much forward to that. Thank you, Gary, for rescuing me on the name of that. So you maybe have to guess, rescue me for the next few days. I tell you, that rewiring kind of like confused my wiring in my brain, except I can still hear Dom this time, so we're doing okay. So remember to stay tuned, and remember to stay wrapped in the wings of angels, and let your heart light shine until we talk again. Bye.